Hello, and welcome to the Tech Dirt Podcast. I'm Mike Masnick.
The world is increasingly technological, so we have better get methodical. Bringing precision to critical digital journalism with the singular vision of a modern monocle. Stopping the copyright bullies from pulling the wool on us. Facing and taking on all the blatant hate and trolls. Document the ways that they aim to take control. Scrutinize and brutalize and make them fold. If we don't stand up to them, someone will get hurt. So grab a shovel and dig up the tech dirt. If we don't stand up to them, someone will get hurt. So grab a shovel and dig up the tech dirt.
In what almost felt as a throwback to congressional hearings from a few years ago, last week, the House Energy and Commerce Committee had a hearing on Section 230, which is obviously a fairly common topic here on Tech Dirt. Unlike some of the past hearings, this one didn't even attempt to find a witness who might point out the benefits of Section 230, preferring a lineup of three academics who all seem to very much dislike Section 230 and wish to have it radically changed or even outright repealed. Professors Marianne Franks, Mary Graw-Leary, and Allison Stanger, along with various congressional representatives, got to spend a few hours claiming that Section 230 was horribly bad, had no redeeming qualities, and needed to be done away with without, it seemed, a single voice talking about why Section 230 is actually valuable and important for all people who use an open internet and who like an open internet. Thankfully, for my own sanity, I was traveling last week and was unable to watch the hearing live, though I did read the three witness statements and have watched some of the recording while also skimming a transcript of the hearing, and I would say, in my professional opinion, that it was bad. To me, both the witnesses and the congressional representatives really misled the public, either deliberately or through confusion regarding the nature of Section 230, its intersection with the First Amendment, as well as its intersection with a number of other laws as well, and basically just on how the internet itself works. One organization that has continued to stand up for the importance of Section 230 and for the open internet is the Wikimedia Foundation, who hopefully, if you're listening to this, you know who they are. They run Wikipedia and do other wonderful things. Rebecca MacKinnon has been a longtime defender of the open internet and free speech across a variety of different roles, but currently she's the Vice President of Global Advocacy at the Wikimedia Foundation, and she is joining us today on the podcast to talk about why Section 230 is actually so important, why it deserves to be protected, and perhaps a little bit about why last week's hearing was so problematic. So, Rebecca, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike, and it's great to see you again. I still remember when the two of us were awardees yes. of the IP3 Award back in, I think it was 2012, if I recall. Okay. So yeah, we've both been at this for a
yes,
while.
Yes.
You know, and so when people are like, oh, you're just arguing, making these arguments because you work for Wikimedia, I'm like, no, these have been my positions forever.
Yes, yes.
And the reason why I'm so excited to be working for the Wikimedia Foundation and defending the rights of Wikipedians to edit Wikipedia and other free knowledge projects is that the positions that one needs to take in order to defend the right of Wikipedia to exist and the right of Wikipedians to do what they do. Those are exactly the same positions I've always been taking, both in terms yes. of the right to privacy, right to freedom of expression, and intermediary liability protections, which brings us, of course, to Section 230. And I would not disagree with any thing you just said in describing the hearing that took place last week. It was very regrettable that it was very one-sided.
Yeah. Usually they have a token representative who will present mm-hmm. the other side, but they didn't even bother this
yeah,
time.
Yeah, we tried to kind of get messages over there, you know, if you want a platform host to testify, we'll will show up. but to no avail. But I guess that's the point, is that if I or a colleague had been able to show up to this hearing and present our perspective, is that a couple of things. One is that while the conversation revolved around a small handful of household name platforms, of course, Section 230 protects a much broader range of online activities, platforms, and communities, mm-hmm. really. And so to make it just about, you know, four or five platforms and concerns people have, is really irresponsible, to put it mildly, because it affects everybody. And, you know, if I had been there, I would have invited people who are advocating Section 230 reform to apply what I and my colleagues increasingly like to call the Wikipedia test, mm-hmm. to their proposal. And so the question is, if you want to make sure that your proposal will address the harms you're seeking to address without negatively impacting a global public good or multiple global public goods, things that we want to protect and preserve on the internet, for example, Wikipedia, mm-hmm. apply the Wikipedia test. If your proposal, if we kind of red team your proposal with what that would do to Wikipedia, if we can identify ways in which this would either prevent the foundation from operating Wikipedia or any nonprofit platform host from operating Wikipedia, or make it much harder for people to safely edit Wikipedia without being sued into oblivion, going to jail, threatened into hiding, etc., then maybe you should reconsider your proposal. Abolishing Wikipedia, abolishing Section 230.
Which could be the same thing.
Abolishing Section 230, yes. would equal abolishing Wikipedia. And we have yet to see, there are people who have argued, well, we could reform it in such a way that it wouldn't hurt Wikipedia. We've not yet seen such a proposal. If someone would like to show us a proposal that really wouldn't hurt Wikipedia, we'll have a conversation about it. But we've yet to see any such thing. And certainly Wikipedia has only been able to exist because there are strong intermediary liability protections in the shape here in the United States of Section 230, and taking similar shape in a few other key jurisdictions. And so what does this mean, right? What this means is, not only is the Wikimedia Foundation shielded from being sued by everybody who hates their Wikipedia page, which is a lot of people.
Yes.
We're facing a slap suit in Portugal right now that is public knowledge. We've written about it, where a rich guy doesn't like his Wikipedia page, and he's he's going after us and trying to get to the people who edited his page, you know. So this is a real thing that we deal with. But not only are we protected from lawsuits against the foundation for what our volunteer editors put on Wikipedia, but of course, even though Wikipedia is a free encyclopedia that anyone can edit, it's not like you can put anything on Wikipedia and it just stays there.
Right.
Right. Anybody who's edited Wikipedia has had stuff taken down, most likely. And those rules are set and enforced by our volunteer community who elect people with administrative authority to enforce the rules. Section 230 protects our volunteer community's right to set and enforce rules about what constitutes encyclopedic, well-sourced information. And so without Section 230, not only could the foundation be sued, but the individuals who are setting and enforcing rules can be sued by people who are unhappy that their content, which was deemed not to be factual or not to be well-sourced or otherwise violating the rules, or if somebody's kicked off for harassment or other reasons people get kicked off the platform, our volunteers are not shielded from lawsuits. So what does that mean? That means that it becomes a lot more risky to be a Wikipedia editor. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people aren't going to want to edit Wikipedia, which is going to make it a lot less valuable as a resource because its quality will go down. It also means because if your platform is going to get sued every time somebody feels they've been impugned or that they don't like your version, you know, your well-sourced facts that have appeared on your platform, we simply can't afford to operate Wikipedia,
right?
Right? So obviously, you know, having no Section 230, that's why that is, you know, abolish Section 230, abolish Wikipedia is pretty much the same thing. With reforms, though, people say, oh, you know, the change that was proposed in Gonzalez versus Google last year, which would have, you know, you could still, it's not the content we'd go after, it's the recommendation systems we're going after, and that doesn't hurt you. Well, recommendation system was defined so broadly that it actually might affect like article of the day or
right.
any number of ways in which content gets recommended to editors to edit or and so on. And so I guess the point being is that we have yet to see a proposal that didn't, even if it wasn't intended to affect a platform like ours, wouldn't inevitably do harm to our community and make it much harder for us to operate Wikipedia.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the things that struck me, and this was in Professor Stenger's submitted statement, was she actually responded to the claim that Wikipedia, you know, would be harmed by modifying Section 230 and effectively said, I don't believe it, which is an odd thing to say, and then claim that she didn't think it would have any impact because, and I have the quote because it was such a weird quote that seems so disconnected from reality to me, said, I'm not convinced this is a danger for Wikipedia since their editing is done by humans who have First Amendment rights, which I'm not sure if she understands how any of this actually works. Is she saying like it's okay to sue a bunch of Wikipedia editors because they have First Amendment rights, and eventually after having to, you know, destroy their lives and pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to lawyers and fight lawsuits that might take a few years out of their lives, that because eventually they might win, that makes it okay?
Yeah, it's not okay because nobody's going to want to edit Wikipedia exactly. if they're exposing themselves to massive lawsuits. And, you know, yeah, it's we absolutely will not be okay.
Right. Yeah, it strikes me as like this is one of the things that comes up in a lot of these debates about Section 230 is that, you know, and I don't want to be mean to academics because there are lots of very good and thoughtful academics, but it feels like at least in some corners of the academic world, they don't realize like the real world human impacts that something like a lawsuit or even the threat of a lawsuit or even the possibility of liability can have on an individual and their ability to speak. And it's not just like speaking in the sense of, you know, posting your opinion to Facebook or Twitter or whatever. It is, you know, in your case, posting factual information or editing factual information or posting, you know, sources or whatever it might be. All of those things, you know, if they had the potential for liability, could ruin someone's lives. And that is going to create a mm-hmm. real chilling effect that scares them away. And so
yeah.
I wish that there were a way that the academics who were on the panel last week and the various congressional representatives understood that, but it felt like they were not there to understand that point.
Well, that certainly was the impression one comes away with after listening. And it's excuse my frog in my throat here, but it's not just the excuse me again for the second frog in my throat. It's not just the individuals editing Wikipedia as well. I mean, let's assume that the world is better off because Wikipedia exists, but not just Wikipedia, that if there were more community-run public interest platforms, you know, whether it's the Internet Archive, mm-hmm. whether it's various open data projects, whether it's a much smaller kind of, I don't know, university-run community site that's dealing with a particular local issue, right? And its content is governed and moderated by people in that community, let's say, right? Section 230 protects all of these things. Let's say, you know, there's a lot of folks in academia right now, many of them my friends, talking about the need for more public interest technology, mm-hmm. for more public interest nonprofit digital spaces that are not being run for the purpose of generating advertising revenue or some other revenue, but are really run for a public interest purpose and, you know, are funded as nonprofits in some way, or maybe locally government funded or, you know, whatever. Anyway, the point being are not you know, surveillance capitalism driven right. The world would be better off if there were more community run digital spaces that are self-governed by those communities rather than everybody dependent on a handful of commercial platforms, then you want to make sure that the law encourages and supports the emergence of more public interest spaces. And to say that, well, the First Amendment protects them, so they're going to be okay, is absolutely false. How do you do a nonprofit community startup? How do you even begin if the first thing out of the blocks is you're going to get sued?
Yeah. It's a very weird situation that it feels like people who don't have experience with this stuff and don't necessarily understand it. And I mean, that's just one of sort of the many problems of this. The other thing that struck me, and this comes up a lot in the discussions on Section 230, that I think is a fallacy that I was hoping you might be able to talk to, is this idea that, you know, everybody has complaints about how different things are handled or different sites are moderated, or as you said, like they don't like their Wikipedia page in some cases. And there's this weird belief that, and I'm not even entirely sure where it comes from, that if we were to repeal or change Section 230 in some format, that fixes that, that magically content moderation will get better or Wikipedia editing will get better. And I'm not sure, I don't think that's true, and I'm not sure where that belief comes from. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on that argument.
Well, there's a couple of things. One is there is no magic fix, right? You can't fix the internet like you can fix your television or something, right? It's a complex socio-technical system, and like a city or any other kind of human space, there is no quick fix to crime or to, you know, traffic violations or whatever, right? It's a negotiation that is endless, and nobody agrees on where the red lines are and where, you know, appropriate law enforcement starts and stops and where abuse begins and, you know, et cetera. We argue that's why we need to be a democracy. That's why we need to hold power accountable, because nobody agrees on this stuff ever, right? And that's how the internet's going to be. And we need to stop thinking about internet regulation as if there's like some magic solution that's just going to fix everything. So that's one thing. But the other thing is that there are so many other different tools in the toolkit that one could start to apply to the problem that are going to likely do much more to actually address the problem. None are going to be a magic fix. Yet you need to apply several tools and try a whole bunch of things, and things get better over time. And that's just kind of how the real world works. We need a strong privacy law. You know, a lot of the harms that were discussed in that hearing are caused by irresponsible collection and use of people's data, which is used to amplify and target people with messages that they're susceptible to, et cetera, et cetera. And Section 230 won't necessarily fix that. A privacy law will, you know, there's no one thing that's going to, you know, right? But a privacy law will get us further than Section 230 reform, frankly. And then we can say, okay, that fixed, here's what that fixed. Now we need to, you know, and it's going to take a while. And again, no legislative action is going to be the magic bullet to a better internet any more than any legislative action is going to address the you know, various social problems here in San Francisco, where I happen to be today. It's a complex push and pull negotiation. You try things, you know, you move forward, but you all have to, you know, the polity needs to be working, you know, together to some degree of good faith or effort, while everybody is of course disagreeing and holding everybody accountable. But you know, it's messy, and it never ends. That's governance. That's governance in the physical world, and that's governance of digital spaces. You know, that's just how it's going to be, and people just need to be more realistic about that. And also, our lawmakers and the people who are influencing our lawmakers, I wish there was a bit more conversation about what kind of internet we want to have and what we should be doing to support and nurture that and protect the good things that are already out there. Right. Yeah. And of course, I believe Wikipedia is one such, but there are many other things. And what is it that make those things thrive, and how can we do more of that? Right. Yeah. How can we help the people who create these spaces? How can we enable more such people to do more of those types of things? And we don't hear enough of that, sort of the positive vision.
Yes.
And it has a lot to do with online community self-governance and, you know, are your rights to create and operate a platform protected? As a community, as individuals coming together, and that requires both, you know, liability protections. Mm-hmm. It also requires strong privacy protections, because if you're in a particular community who's coming together on a particular issue that is perhaps challenging power. I was talking to somebody the other day who's in Bolivia, and there's a lot of online environmental activism and people trying to collect information online and publish it about abuses taking place. And there are a lot of entities who don't like that happening. So anonymity, or strong pseudonymity in any case, is extremely important. The right of the platform to protect its user's identity is very important if you're going to enable public interest platforms to survive and thrive and be able to speak truth to power. And that's another thing that some other legislative proposals recently, you know, in the interest of protecting young people and so on, mm-hmm. have been, you know, saying, oh, well, we need to be able to surveil people more on the internet. Yes. In order to protect vulnerable people, which, of course, will make other vulnerable people more vulnerable to attack.
Yes.
Perhaps even from their own parents. But yes. In any case, we won't go too far in that direction, or we'll get sucked into a deep quagmire.
Yes, yes. I mean, these are the things that I could talk about forever, and I know you can as well. But, you know, one of the things that does that makes me wonder as we – you know, they have these hearings and there's all this discussion and all this focus on Section 230. And I think you're right that, like, so many of these issues are really at the core, you know, privacy or data protection related issues. I think it's very challenging to create a good privacy law. I think there have been a lot of proposals that have been problematic. But it's weird to me how much of the focus has been just on Section 230. As if, like, everything that is bad on the internet is somehow because of Section 230, when I don't think that's true, and I don't think there's any real support for that. But is there – why do you think Section 230 gets so much of the focus?
Because it's such an easy target. It's just so easy to kind of overgeneralize and say, oh, my God, I just realized – the platforms are shielded from liability for all this crap on them. I'm so outraged. It's you know, I remember there was a period where I was hearing this from kind of random people who weren't paying a whole lot of attention to the internet, but were to tech policy, but then kind of heard something on the radio or something and suddenly got really energized about it. And for whatever reason, you know, people just don't get as energized about, you know, privacy policies,
right,
or you know, privacy reforms or anything like that. There's something about the way that Section 230 gets framed or the way it can be kind of misleadingly explained that gets people who don't pay much attention to tech to gets kind of non-experts very excited very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of uniquely so with this issue.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder if it's like because of the title of Jeff Kossoff's book, that because of, you know, which is a quote from somebody else, but it says the 26 words that created the internet, people assume that because of that, that means everything bad on the internet is because of the 26 words of Section 230. And I almost wonder how much that has adjusted the debate.
Yeah, well, we're also in a period where I remember back not long before you and I got that IP3 award, where there was nothing bad that the internet could do.
That's
everybody was like, you know, Twitter revolutions and, you know, Facebook revolutions and all you need, you know, there was the famous quote from Wael Ghonim, who was the Google guy who got jailed in Egypt, you know, all you need to do to tear down a dictatorship is to give people the internet, you know, and there was just this huge assumption that, you know, don't sweat the small stuff because inevitably, inexorably, the internet is going to free us all. And then, you know, in the ensuing years, people have fallen completely out of love with that idea and kind of divorced that idea and are very angry that they had ever been in love with that idea. And so are now hating on the internet. And it just kind of goes like a pendulum, and we're kind of somewhere on the other end. So part of that, I think, for those of us who love the good things about the internet and still kind of interact with the good things on the internet every day, I think it's time to really find a way to remind people, not just remind people about the good, but to more loudly project a positive vision for the internet's future that's like better.
Yeah.
Right. It's even better than kind of what people, than that kind of youthful love people had for the internet that was totally unrealistic back then.
Yeah.
And let's now have a more mature relationship, mature and loving relationship with a better internet who's, you know, gone to, you know, been in and out of the Better Internet Bureau. you know, or who themselves has matured and become more self-aware. Your listeners will imagine kind of what age I'm at this point, but you know, but seriously though, we need leadership collectively that projects a positive vision for where we want to go, and not just, okay, let's squash all the stuff that we don't like.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, it's almost funny that if you go back to that period of time where, you know, the internet was seen as like could do no wrong and was going to save the world and all this kind of stuff. The funny thing to me is that the one exception, this is maybe the timing is not exactly right, but a few years earlier, at least, like the one exception was Wikipedia, where people thought Wikipedia was dangerous and bad and problematic and anyone can edit it. And what a horror that will be. And we need this like carefully curated internet in order to like, you know, to protect us from the evils of Wikipedia. And it's interesting to me now that it feels like all of that has flipped. And now all of these companies, you know, the big tech companies are all obviously problematic. And, you know, legitimately, there are problems with them. And then Wikipedia.
And they're using our data.
Well, yes, yes, of course. And you know, and Wikipedia is generally seen as, you know, rightfully as being a really good thing. But, you know, I think you're right. I think that it is important for people to understand. You know, I had done, and I actually mentioned this on last week's podcast too. So now I'm getting repetitive in my old age. But you know, a few years ago, I had put together. You talked at the beginning about how you wished you could present the Wikipedia test to the various academics on this panel or to the representatives. And I had put together a test suite of other online communities that any internet regulatory proposal you should run through, how is it going to impact these? And of course, Wikipedia is near the top of the list, if not at the top of the list, because it's an obvious one. It is a very large platform, but it is not a for-profit, and it works in a very different way. And one that has been, you know, unique and uniquely fascinating in how well it's worked as a provider of information, of factual, useful information for, you know, billions of people around the world. And I think you're right that we do need to get back to this story of, you know, the good things that the internet creates. And some of that are some of these smaller communities and these smaller sites and other areas of the internet that, you know, bring people together, bring like-minded people together, bring people together around certain interests or certain areas of, you know, of history or news or whatever it might be. That was like what excited all of us about the internet in the early days when we first got access to it. But many of those things are really enabled, and the fact that they exist is only a result of things like Section 230 and intermediary liability protections, that it feels like that has gotten lost in the way that we view the internet today. Do you have any suggestions on, you know, how to get that more positive view out there? I mean, I don't know if this is just like a natural pendulum. You know, the internet was great, now the internet is horrible, and eventually the pendulum will swing back and people start to think the internet is great again. Or is there some sort of proactive steps that you think need to happen in between now and then?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we can talk about, you know, if we're thinking about a positive vision, you know, what kind of society do we want, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to have open societies in which we're able to hold our leaders accountable, in which everyone can have an education, no matter what their background, in which everyone can access the information they need and to speak, you know, have freedom of speech and their rights protected, and the ability to exercise their rights. And so for such a society to exist, and for people to thrive in it, you know, of course, information platforms and the internet play an inevitable role. And so, again, it's just kind of back to the fundamentals. You need to be able to, you know, not only set up an online business, but communities need to be able to form platforms and online projects that serve their needs, mm-hmm. and govern them.
Yes.
That is actually one of the necessary conditions for the kind of society we want to have.
Yeah.
We also, you know, you need, in order for that to happen, you need certain copyright conditions to be met too, right? Mm-hmm. Like if people can't share information without getting sued,
yes,
you know, to speak of another battle you and I have both, yes, been involved with back in the day, you know, and so that just open licensing, open content, people who want to share their content can share their content. And so having those legal frameworks, and privacy protections, because you need to be able to speak truth to power, because, mm-hmm. and it's not just, you know, someone speaking truth to their government. It could be someone who, is of a particular persuasion in a very conservative community, or in a community that, you know, they, are not of the majority religion, you know, persuasion, beliefs, whatever, and or their parents just, you know, don't like who they love, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so are you free to seek out information that you need about your health in any number of circumstances, right? Can everyone thrive? Can everybody also have their rights protected? And have equitable opportunities. It all comes down to information, but it comes down to not just having a completely commercial environment. I'm not saying you can't have any commerce. I'm not,
right.
I'm not that far. but we need a robust digital public sphere that is actually run in the public interest, you know, the public parks of the internet, as Eli Pariser and, mm-hmm. and, you know, the national parks of the internet or whatever, you know, we need these public spaces, that communities can run. And and it's important, not just in the United States, but when I travel, I hear from people in a lot of countries, we're really angry that our online spaces are controlled by these Americans in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. And by lawmakers in the United States and Europe, and we have no agency. And so having legal and policy environments that actually protect and support people's rights to form their own online projects and communities is, it feels to me, the first, you know, one of the best answers to that. I mean, obviously, we're not going to fix the internet anymore, you know, than we're going to fix, you know, whatever city anyone happens right. to be in. But I think that's an essential component of a positive vision for an internet that supports open, accountable, thriving societies in which everyone has opportunities.
Yeah. And so I think to close out this discussion, I'm going to ask you the question that I keep getting asked, and I'll give you a quick version of my answer, which is the question is, you know, what should we change about Section 230? Because there's the, you know, and I have a problem with that question because it presumes that there is like a necessary change to 230. My answer is generally either nothing, because I think it is actually pretty good, or if anything, and this will never happen, we should expand it. So you talked about copyright stuff. I think we could get rid of the IP exemption, get rid of the way the DMCA is structured, because there are all sorts of problems there, and expand 230 to be more to include IP. That's never going to happen. I recognize that, but that's sort of my answer. But I'm curious if you have any thoughts, because that question keeps coming up, you know, would you change Section 230? And if so, how?
Well, I wouldn't until people tried a few other obvious things that they keep not doing.
Yeah.
Like privacy law,
right?
And let's see how that addresses some of the problems that are more connected to the business model,
yep.
right? Let's you know, you actually have to do some things in sequence.
Here. Yes.
And then once we see where we are, we can again, if somebody can bring me a reform proposal that passes the Wikipedia test, you know, happy to entertain it. I don't feel that it's the job of myself or my colleagues to spend a whole lot of time when we barely have time to just
yes,
deal with
yes.
the things that really protect people from harm to figure out what that reform is. We, you know, it's not clear to us exactly, but we welcome someone to figure that out, and we're happy to have a conversation about it.
Yeah. No, I think that is the correct answer, and that is fair. It's like I have said, if someone shows me, you know, their reform ideas for Section 230, I'm always willing to look through it, but I've yet to see one that wouldn't obviously cause a lot more harm than good. So anyways, Rebecca McKinnon, thank you so much, certainly for all of your advocacy over the years, going back even before Wikipedia. And
thank you for yours.
Thank you. And thank you for joining me on the podcast and discussing this. And hopefully we will start to convince more people that the internet actually does have some good things. And a lot of that is because of Section 230. And we should be very careful before we modify it without recognizing what it might do to Wikipedia and to lots of other parts of the internet that are good, that I think are universally good, and that I think and hope that people recognize as being so good and useful. So thank you again. Thanks for all your work. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. And thanks for everyone who is listening as well. And we'll be back next week with another podcast. To grab a shovel and dig up the tap. If we don't stand up to them, someone will get hurt. To grab a shovel and dig up the tap. If we don't stand up to them, someone will get hurt. To grab a shovel and dig up the tap.